So, our next case for argument is United States v. Jin. Ms. Jantz.
May it please the Court. We have never contested that Ms. Jin's conduct was a theft. But we have always maintained that her conduct was not a theft of trade secrets. You could have posted these three charged documents in the Wall Street Journal, and it wouldn't have made a difference. And the reason is that no one else was interested in this 2G technology in order to compete with Motorola.
I don't understand that. This old-fashioned technology, it's still being used.
It is still being used, Judge.
Motorola has a lot of customers for it, doesn't it?
They do have a lot of customers, Judge.
Well, why wouldn't another company want to have some of those customers?
Number one, I have 3 points on this issue, Judge. Number one, it's the government's burden to show at trial there was that sort of interest that another company wouldn't want to get those customers.
I don't think that's right. You have to go out and look for someone and say, oh, look, if you could be given this, wouldn't you like to be in this business? I mean, that's ridiculous. We assume an economy like this that if there's a business that has a lot of customers and it's based on a technology that's a trade secret, that if some other firm were given that information, the trade secret were dispelled, as of course it could be by perfectly lawful means, then someone else would go into that business because he'd have this technological knowledge without having paid anything for it.
Judge, I think what we have to look at in the first place is how do we define a trade secret? Because I think that idea that anything that makes money other people would be interested in would encompass far too much. What Lange tells us...
I understand you. Why does a company keep something a secret? Now, partly they do it maybe because they want to feel important. People like to think they know secrets. But it's a pain to maintain information as a trade secret. And you have to take rather elaborate precautions in order to be able to enforce your trade secret. So why would a company do that if they couldn't be hurt by the revelation of the trade secret?
A couple of points, Judge. One, I think Your Honor's correct that some companies keep things secret because they want to believe that they still have important and viable technology. But more than that, the security precautions in this case were not just for these three trade secret documents. On the Motorola campus, there is tons of security, but it's for all of Motorola's technology. And so while these three documents, there were parts of them that were secret at the edges, in fact, most of the documents were from open standards. And it was Motorola's sort of special sauce or tweaks
on
the edges.
You don't buy immunity from theft of trade secrets by stealing a lot of stuff that isn't trade secrets along with the trade secrets, right?
But we have to determine...
That's ridiculous.
We have to determine whether they're trade secrets in the first place.
Well, it seems to me they're trade secrets if they are, potentially commercially valuable. And actually to go out and see whether someone would have a business plan for using this, and how would you even prove that? When you get consulting firms to say, well, I think there might be a business that I could interest in this cheap communications technology.
It's actually not a burden too high, Judge, because if you look at the cases we've cited, Lang, Holly, Chung, MAI, all the cases, Genovese, all the cases we cite in our brief, those folks were able to show that there were competitors that were interested in that technology.
It's impossible to show. I don't understand why that should be added as a proof requirement.
Because Lang tells us
it's like saying, you stole something, but really nobody wants it, and therefore you're not a criminal? I don't understand that.
Isn't stealing secret information to take with you to a new job in itself harmful to the company? In other words, the brief characterizes her use of the technology as personal and non-competitive preparation for her job at Sun Caissons, and so not harmful to Motorola. But I really have a terrible problem with that.
Judge, I believe you're getting to the second element we challenge, which was...
We're not, you know, because time is moving.
Thank you, Judge. Yes, the second element, intent to injure, we do maintain that there was no intent to injure because this case is very different than cases where someone takes secrets and they're going to give them to a competitor or use them to compete. Here, there wouldn't have been an injury. There wouldn't have been a harm to Motorola for her using them for her own personal job preparation. And that is the reason we believe the second element was not used.
Suppose this is almost a true case. So once my mother-in-law gave us a little statuette, very, very ugly.
But because
it had been given to us by my mother-in-law, my wife's mother, we felt we had to, you know, leave it on display. Now, suppose someone had come and stolen it. And suppose I said, thank goodness we're rid of that hideous statue. And moreover, we have insurance. So we're going to be paid for this hideous set. I am so grateful to that thief, right? But it still would have been a crime.
It would have been a crime. It would have been a theft.
You can steal a trade secret that some company has spent a fortune keeping secret in the utterly mistaken belief that it has... that it really would have value to a competitor, and a competitor would use it and ruin its business. It was just a terrible mistake. That is still the theft of a trade secret.
I agree it's a theft. I do not agree it's a theft of a trade
secret. Well, what is it a theft of?
It's a theft of business information or business knowledge, but the statute...
But if secret information used in a trade, that makes it a trade secret. You're just making everything too complicated.
What I'm looking at, Judge...
There's absolutely no purpose to what you're doing, because we don't want people to be stealing trade secrets in the hope that a court would say, well, it's okay what you did, because it really isn't that valuable.
2 points, though. One, we want to be careful that people are not convicted under statutes that haven't been met by the government. And I think that's an important consideration as well. But what I'm looking at...
Been what by the government?
Haven't been proven by the government.
Now, come on, that's circular, because you have added a new element to what everybody understands is a trade secret. And then you're saying that, well, of course, if that element isn't proved, it hasn't been a theft of a trade secret. I'm saying I can't see any reason why trade secret should be defined as something that has demonstrable commercial value to a competitor of the holder of the secret.
The reason for that position is the statute itself and Lange and Lange's interpretation of the statute. The statute says that to be a trade secret, you have to derive value from secrecy. And what Lange tells us is that value comes from usefulness to rivals, to competitors. That is a central position that Lange takes. And that's where we're getting it from. We're not making it up. We're looking at the statute, and Lange. That's why we've taken the position, because you can't assume in the first place that someone is a trade secret. That's one of the elements that has to be proven. We haven't added an element here. What we're doing is trying to interpret for the court the statutory definition of trade secret and independent economic value in Section 1839.
So your theory is that a potential competitor must be identified?
Not necessarily by name, but there has to be some showing of competitive interest.
Suppose that what's stolen is, I don't know, let's suppose it's the design work on an iPad stolen back in 2006 before the rest of the industry even knows somebody's working on it. There's no There's no competitive interest because nobody even knows about it. Surely then that would be a trade secret, right?
There could be a showing at that point that the technology itself
simply based on the value of the technology.
Value of the technology, the cutting-edge nature of the technology, mm-hmm. its place in the marketplace, the fact that an iPad in 2006 was ahead of its time would suggest others would be interested in it. Here we had 2G technology that the district court found had already been surpassed by other technologies.
Well, it had been surpassed in some applications. That's the problem that I have, is that we've got, what, the Israeli Defense Forces and other military applications for this push-to-talk technology, right?
There was some showing that the Israeli Defense Forces were
and
using
that technology. And was there evidence of some advantages, you know, having to take up only a very narrow part of the electromagnetic spectrum to communicate on these channels?
There were some advantages to IDEN, but there were also open, and that means publicly available standards that met the same purposes as IDEN. This particular one is called Tetra.
Anybody buy these Motorola products?
Perhaps they get good service from Motorola. That doesn't necessarily mean it's the only technology out there, or it's the best, or even that it's up to date.
Well, why couldn't someone else sell this product?
Well, other people were using similar technology, but it was of a different nature, Tetra being the best example of it. And other folks were moving into 3G and 4G. The idea that if anyone has a product on which they're making money, that's a trade secret, would be too encompassing. It would include too much.
See, your position really undermines criminal law, because we don't usually ask in criminal law about the, unless it's, you know, a matter of sentencing, how great is the loss and so on. But when the question is guilt, we don't ask about the value of stolen things.
We don't unless the statute tells us that we must. And here...
Well, what is the language in the statute that you think tells us we must look at?
Judge, it's from 18 U.S.C. section 1839, subparagraph 3b, that says that in order to be a trade secret, this is subpart b, the information must derive independent economic value.
1839 what?
Subsection 3b.
Subsection what?
3b.
3b.
That is the definition of a trade secret that must be met as an element of this conviction. 1839 3b says the information derives independent economic value, actual or potential, from not being generally known to and not being readily ascertainable through proper means by the public. And
right, because if this trade secret, once this trade secret is opposed to competitors, Motorola will not be able to derive as much economic value from it, because other people will be able the secret as such will have no value anymore, because it won't be a secret. Anybody can use it.
Well, just as a factual matter for this record, that wouldn't have been the case, because there was no evidence that Ms. Jin was going to give it to someone else. In fact, she was going to use it for her own personal job.
Your proposition is that this trade secret has no independent. Your proposition is this trade secret, when it was a trade secret, before it was exposed, had no value, zero value.
Not our position, Judge. Our position is that its value did not derive from secrecy.
But it wouldn't have any value then. If it's part of the public domain, what is its value to Motorola?
They were still using it and making money on it. It's not necessarily, it wouldn't have been valueless just because it wasn't secret.
How can they make money on it? Because anybody else can use it.
They could have, but there was no evidence that people were interested in doing so.
And why weren't they interested? Because there's no profit in it.
No, because it was 2G, it was outdated, and the barriers to entry, the infrastructure that
would have been. You're saying it's valueless.
Mm-hmm. Not saying it's valueless. It does have value to Motorola. But the question is, where does that value come from? And Lange tells us that in order to meet the statute, the value has to come from usefulness to competitors, to rivals. That is a central holding of Lange, and that's where we're getting this position from.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Just to briefly touch on the other issues we've raised, we've also raised some sentencing issues. One, that the district court failed to address Ms. Jin's principal sentencing argument that unwarranted disparities would have occurred in this case with the sentence that she got.
Her sentence was below the guideline range, correct?
It was, Judge.
Have we ever recognized that kind of a disparity argument with a below guidelines range? Below guideline sentence.
Not disparity in particular, but absolutely in Johnson, which we've cited in our reply brief, it was the exact same circumstances here, where a principal sentencing argument was made, not addressed. In that case, it was crack to powder ratio. Johnson is the case. I see my time is up, so I'll finish my thought.
She wasn't prosecuted, was she, for lying to the FBI?
She was not prosecuted for lying to the FBI, Judge.
Well, that certainly deserved an enhancement in her sentence.
It's not in dispute, and it was not
raised
by the government, Judge.
Was unbelievable.
Judge,
she defrauded Motorola quite apart from the trade secret, and then she lied, and really bad behavior.
Regardless of what her conduct, Judge, our position is that these convictions, the elements were not met, and there were sentencing errors. And I see my time is up.
Okay, thank you very much, Ms. Jantz. Mr. Dullier?
May it please the Court, my name is Steve Dullier, and I represent the United States of America in this matter. The defendant in this case thwarted Motorola's security measures to steal thousands of documents, documents that she stole over the course of 2 days, and then soon thereafter attempted to board a plane to China, where she was going to work for Sun Kaisense, which was a Chinese telecommunications company that developed technology, telecommunications technology, for the People's Liberation Army and generally the Chinese military. Now, the first issue raised by the defendant on this appeal is pertains to the definition of a trade secret under Section 1839.3, and that issue has been waived. The definition applied by the district court during the course of this bench trial was agreed to by the defendant, by the government, and the district court. But even if that issue wasn't waived, there was no error in the definition used by the district court, because that definition is consistent with the plain language of the statute, legislative history, as well as the case law that existed at the time and now.
This may sound like a rather odd question, but so what, right? What other purpose does the Economic Espionage Act serve beyond safeguarding a company's economic competitiveness? In other words, keeping its secrets from competitors who would actually maybe, would use them.
Judge, if I understand your question, you're asking beyond just competitive use, what other purposes would the statute have? I think you saw one in this case, Judge, that does have its scope is broader than just competitive use. For instance, Bruce Drower, who was an engineer who helped develop this technology back in the early 1990s for Motorola, testified at trial that one of the documents would give insight to someone outside of Motorola that would allow them to intercept communications over the IDEN network. And the argument here, Judge, is that the independent economic value of keeping that information secret is, one, the integrity of the IDEN system, which obviously has economic implications, whether to consumers or to Motorola, not having to expend money to fix that network when hackers get into it. But, yes, to answer your question, it has a broader implication than merely just competitive use.
I did wonder how Mr. Drard's his testimony that Motorola opted to keep, its IDEN technology secret actually established that the IDEN technology derived value from that secrecy.
Judge, he did testify. Mr. Drought was on the engineer side, and there was also Michael Fox, who was on the business side of IDEN. But to answer your question, there was an economic value in keeping it secret. In other words, Motorola, from the time it was invented in the early 1990s through 2007 when this theft happened and beyond, kept it closely held because they were the only supplier of IDEN technology. And there was a competitive advantage to that in that anybody who had an ident system or wanted an ident system had one choice for their supplier, and that was Motorola. It had a tremendous economic value.
So who wanted, as of, say, 2006 or early 2007, who wanted ident systems or would have wanted them and why?
Judge, as far as who would have wanted them, anyone who wanted Motorola's ident customers would be the direct answer to your question. They didn't have competitors in ident, but they had plenty of competitors in the cellular telecommunications market.
Somebody could come up. Was the theory that you could have a kind of aftermarket? As your handsets expire or wear out, we can replace them for you more cheaply than Motorola can. Is that the theory?
That's yes, Your Honor. But it goes beyond just the handsets. The ident technology is actually from handset to handset and the whole infrastructure in between. So the big money really is in these base radios and the infrastructure pieces. And basically, at the time in 2007, 32 different operators, cellular telephone operators, used ident. And operators are like the Verizons of the world. And they did that. They used that in 22 different countries.
And what was it at that stage? I'm a latecomer to cell phone technology myself, but what was it at that stage that would have made this 2G technology attractive to people?
Mm-hmm. Your Honor, it was already up and running. There was already a defined market for the ident technology. I hope I'm answering your question, but to give you an analogy, if you went from an ident system to a CDMA system, you have to wipe out the entire infrastructure. You can't just simply put in CDMA technology into an ident infrastructure. So it's a big business decision whether to what technology you actually go with. And currently, if you bought an ident system, Judge.
So you just kind of have some momentum going forward.
Right, and say you needed, and this was Bruce Drower testified to this at trial. If you're an ident customer and you want to expand your network, things are going well, you're adding customers, you need additional infrastructure to cover that larger geographic region or the same geographic region, just more customers. And that means more base radios, more transceivers, all the infrastructure pieces to make that network operate. And what's important in that, Judge, is that, again, if you need another base radio, you're a customer and you need a base radio, you can only go to Motorola. They have a huge competitive advantage because they've got 20 years of research and development already done that they've kept under lock and key so nobody else can compete with them in the specific ident supplier market.
Can I just shift your attention to the question Judge Rovner was asking about earlier, which is intent to harm? Because as I understand the statute of conviction, you had to prove beyond a reasonable doubt intent to harm.
That's correct, Judge.
And if the defendant, as devious and dishonest as she was in her conduct here, if she had actually meant to simply keep it to herself, could we infer harm from that, an intent to harm?
With the same facts as in this case?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yes, Judge, based on what her conduct was. If her statement was different to law enforcement, that wouldn't change the fact that she basically told a series of lies just to have 2 days unfettered access to the computer system so she could raid it.
Well, I guess I'm...
Well, let me ask Judge Hamilton's question this way. I'm looking at page 71 of the judge's finding. He says, while the evidence did not establish that someone at Sun Kaizen's had requested the documents or that Jin planned to give the documents to Sun Kaizen's, the evidence demonstrated beyond a reasonable doubt that at a minimum, Jin planned to use the documents to prepare herself for her position at Sun Kaizen's. Well, if she didn't want to give Sun Kaizen's the documents, but just wanted to prepare herself, whatever sounds smart or something, and also that doesn't sound like trying to harm Motorola. Also, Sun Kaizen's is part of Sun Kaizen's is interested in technology of this sort for the Chinese military, which presumably is not, maybe it would actually, but there's no indication that it would be using Motorola secrets given them by her to compete with Motorola in the iDEN business, right? So how would her either giving the documents to Sun Kaizen's, although the judge does not find that she intended to give anything to Sun Kaizen, but how would her transmitting to Sun Kaizen's information that she derived in part from these Motorola documents, how would that hurt Motorola?
Well, Judge, the trade secret that Motorola has developed over these two decades would now be in the hands of a different cellular telecommunications
provider. Motorola isn't providing communications for the Chinese army, right? Maybe Sun Kaizen's is. And so that wouldn't be the loss of an economic opportunity for Motorola if Sun Kaizen's uses this to beat us in a war, right? It would be pretty bad, but it would be a different type of offense. Well, that's your espionage charge, which the judge rejected.
That's correct, Your Honor. And going back to Judge Rovner's point, there was more than just a competitive use here. There was an economic benefit to understand how the technology was being used. So you use, obviously, the example of the People's Liberation Army. They may not want to develop an iDEN network, and they may not very well want to compete in the commercial iDEN market, but they likely want to understand how that technology works when it's being used by the Israeli Defense Forces or potentially other users that they might want to intercept communications on. And that relates to the integrity of the iDEN product. But ultimately, Judge, in this case, the defendant's conduct, what's critical is the defendant was the one who had...
Wait a second. Let me make sure I understand what you're saying. Are you saying that the more Sun Kaizen knows about iDEN through her and was going to learn through her, the more it could disrupt other iDEN networks, which would hurt Motorola?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Is that what you're saying?
Can I ask you about what I think is a lower threshold of proof on that point, which is that if the product derives value from the fact that the technical details are secret, let's say we're talking about encryption materials, then knowledge that the encryption code has been compromised reduces the value of the product. You following me on that?
So far, yes, Judge.
Why isn't so an intent to compromise the integrity of the secrecy winds up being harmful? I mean, that alone is an intent to harm.
I would agree with you, Judge, and that there was evidence to that effect in this case, that's exactly what one of these documents provided was an opportunity to someone outside to intercept communications.
And that's from whose testimony about which?
It was Bruce Drower related to Moto One, and the judge actually made a finding in his opinion and order, and I don't have the exact page, Judge, but it's certainly in the 70s, and the judge makes clear that the economic advantage from the independent economic value to keeping this information secret was really twofold. It was the competitive use, which, in other words, someone with this information could start competing as an iDEN supplier. But then the second piece, Judge, was that, some of the secrets that were contained in the three charged trade secret documents would allow someone to actually intercept communications on an iDEN network.
Thank you.
But as far as the facts of this case and the defendant's intent to harm Motorola, and of course it's the intent to harm or the knowledge that your conduct will harm Motorola, it's either. But in this case, the evidence was clear that she intended to harm, because this is a defendant who had worked in the iDEN field since 1998, and she stayed at Motorola basically until 2007, vast majority of that time working in iDEN. So she had a front row seat for how many people worked on iDEN, the resources that went in iDEN, the fact that it was proprietary technology, and she knew that it was jealously guarded. In other words, every day she went to work at the Schomburg Motorola campus, she went through a series of physical security measures to get to her desk, where she went through a number of network security measures just to access the technology that she was working on. She knew that Motorola held this close, and she knew that a couple documents would have a significant negative impact on Motorola, let alone thousands taken over the course of a couple of days.
What the judge said, I think maybe it was a little, maybe it was what you were saying, maybe it was a little different. But he said even if there was no competitor to Motorola that would have any interest in this, once Motorola learned that she had conveyed this secret to the Chinese army, Motorola would want to take additional security measures for its IBAN. And that would be an expense, obviously.
Yes, Judge.
Because they would worry. No one knows what the Chinese obviously are active in cyber warfare, and no one knows whether they would have an interest in penetrating IDEN networks.
I would agree with that, Judge, and particularly in an instance where there's thousands of documents related to the technology that have been secret for two decades. That would be of particular importance to Motorola, the trade secret holder. Getting back just briefly to the intent to harm, is that this defendant, though, was the person who had the insight into what Sun Kaisen was doing in late 2006, early 2007. She's actually physically working in China at Sun Kaisen. And then she's the one who's handed a stack of documents and asked to help. And those documents, many of which are marked classified secret by the Chinese military, are what she took with her back to the United States when she made the decision to ultimately go and raid the Motorola computer system. And she said that was based on her desire to help her employment at Sun Kaisen. So clearly she saw a connection. Judges, I see that my time's up, and I'd ask that unless there's other additional questions, the government asks that you affirm the conviction and the sentence in this case. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Dolia. So, Ms. Jantz, do you have anything further?
I do. Thank you, Judge. Addressing some of the questions addressed to the government about intent to injure and Sun Kaisen's in the Chinese military, our position is that there was no intent to injure because the secrecy was not going to be compromised. The record shows, and the district court found, she was going to use it for her own personal job preparation.
Was Motorola required to assume that she would honor that intention?
Well, the element is her intent, not
right.
Motorola's assumption.
Right, but her intent was to take the material. And a natural consequence, the theft was going to become known, right? I mean, the computer records show this kind of downloading, right?
I agree with that, Judge.
And if once Motorola knows that this confidential information, regardless of how we characterize it, has been taken, it has to assume that any of that can become public information, correct?
Let me go back on one thing, Judge, and I misspoke. I'm not sure that it would have been found. I'm going to rethink that one. I don't think it would have been found because here they didn't find it from the computer downloading. They found it because they caught her at O'Hare Airport.
Well, they found that first.
They right? did find that first.
But presumably there's a digital trail for downloading thousands of documents on your last 2 days of work to removable storage devices, right? Mm.
There is a digital trail. The question is whether or not they would have looked at it. And the record shows that they were actually not actively looking at their Compass digital system. So I'm not sure that there is nothing in the record that says they necessarily would have found it had she not been caught.
How many documents was she taking with her when she wanted to leave for China?
I think it was in the thousands, Judge. But the only
these were paper documents. And also a flash drive or what?
A mix of both paper and digital, Judge.
How long are the documents?
I think they range in length. But we can assume, I think, fairly safely that it was probably in the thousands of pages, if not more.
She wasn't going to read all those pages.
I agree, Judge. She was not going to read all those pages. But
okay, so what was going to happen to all those pages? She arrives in China with many thousands of pages. She's not going to read all those pages to prepare herself for working for Sun Kaisen. So who's going to read the pages?
Well, one, the district court found that that was her intent, to prepare herself, no other intent. But two, she could have read a lot of them, and she didn't know which one she was going to read or not. But I think we have to come back to the district court's finding that her intent was to prepare herself.
She's going to give those papers to Sun Kaisens and say, look what I've brought you.
But to find that, I think...
I'm not going to read them all. You read them. Maybe you'll find out useful stuff for the Chinese army.
To assume that, Judge, I think we'd have to find that the district court committed clear error, because that's not what the district court found. The district court found that she did not have an intent to give them to Sun Kaisens, that she was going to use them personally to refresh her knowledge. So I think that
no, she wasn't going to read thousands and thousands of pages to refresh her knowledge. That doesn't make any sense.
That's what the district court found, but that doesn't mean she has to read every single one to have that be her intent to take them, to pick and choose when she wanted to read them or not.
Why so many?
I think she was being arbitrary in what she was taking because she didn't know at that time exactly what she needed or not, but I think the record is not... The record tells us, the district court found, that it was her own personal job preparation, nothing more than that.
Well, that was the finding with respect to guilt or innocence, with beyond a reasonable doubt as a standard. But when it came to sentencing, the district judge agreed with what has just been suggested.
That this was
going to be turned over.
The district court agreed with that based on a new affidavit from the government expert, Sean Bateman. We point out the problems with that. But I would point out that Sun Kaisens was involved in completely different technology, CDMA, incompatible with Aiden. And I think that was the basis for the judge's finding, that she was not planning to give them to Sun Kaisens, and Sun Kaisens was not interested in them. So I think the district court's finding that it was own personal job preparation holds up, whether at trial or at sentencing.
Sun Kaisens works for the Chinese army. If someone appears with thousands of trade secret documents dealing with encrypted communications, they're certainly going to pass it on to other people in the Chinese government.
There was no record evidence of that, Judge.
Come on, you can use a little bit of common sense.
Actually, what the record said is that the Chinese government was using technology that was far superior to Aiden.
Yes, but it's interested in the backward technology of their potential enemies, obviously.
I disagree. There was no record evidence of that, Judge.
Well, we know that the Chinese are very active in, you know, cyber surveillance and penetrating and encrypted documentation.
That doesn't mean that they're going to look at every piece of information, particularly when it deals with outdated technology that was not used.
They will. Okay, well, thank you very much. And Ms. Matt, were you appointed? Reappointed, counsel? Oh, the defendant? Well, we thank you very much for your efforts on behalf of your client. And thank Mr. Dodier as well.